Welcome, radio friends, to the latest in a seemingly endless series of sex talk.
Way to start the show on an upbeat note there, DJ Corey.
That was very no exit of you.
I'm your host, DJ Corey, keeping it real. I'm here with Dr. Sexopolis. That's and me. Lance.
Hey, yo.
We have a very, very, very special guest on the phone for you. I personally am wearing no underwear. I don't know about my co-host, but I just want you to know that I have got that indescribable feeling of scrotum against lycra.
Leather. I'm wearing a space age fabric so sheer it can be hardly properly called underpants, even if it might perform some of the same functions.
I'm wearing a male chastity belt.
Well, let's hear from our guest. Welcome, Morgan.
Morgan.
Mistress Morgan.
Mistress Morgan. I thought now that you'd retired, you could no longer call yourself mistress.
Well, I'll always be a mistress at heart.
True. True. So, words.
I hope we haven't been bad boys, Mistress Morgan.
You've been keeping me on hold and playing bad music for far too long.
Wait, hey. That was Devo.
Naughty boys.
Our listeners who are perceptive in the ways of human sexuality might have noticed by the aggressive tone of Morgan's voice and diction that she bears the hallmarks of a dominatrix.
Former dominatrix.
That is true.
And so, indeed, Morgan, welcome to the show. Or should I say, thank you, Morgan, for coming to the show. May I have another?
That's better.
This is the first time I've ever talked to you, Morgan. I'm DJ Corey. And my understanding is that you are both a dominatrix, a...
Former dominatrix.
Former dominatrix.
And former exotic dancer.
That's exotic true. Dancer and graduate student.
Which means graduate
that you have three things in common with me because I am also a
dominatrix. Former dominatrix?
And stripper. Well,
wouldn't you have been a dominator? what is the proper term for a male? What is the proper term for a male version of a dominatrix?
Don't you want to take that, DJ?
Me?
He was asking what the male version of a dominatrix is called.
A master.
Yeah. Okay.
If he, Dr. Sixoff, if he starts making us call him master, I'm going to quit.
We're going to quit. So how long were you, we might as well get the ball rolling, how long were you a dominatrix, Morgan?
For approximately 3 years.
Wow. So now most of our listeners, I'm sure don't know how kind of the dom business works. Do you want to give a brief description of what goes on? I mean, did you rent it out of your own house, your apartment, were you involved in some kind of dungeon?
I worked in two different studios in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. The studios that I worked in generally were composed of five or more ladies. A woman called to make an appointment well in advance.
What kind of screening procedures went on? Clearly you couldn't just take everybody who wanted to get, not everybody who called up was allowed to come, right?
Because not everyone who called had an appropriate understanding of the kinds of things that went on in the dungeon. So we tried generally to screen callers very closely to make sure that their interests matched those that the ladies were willing to provide.
That sounds very euphemistic.
But are you talking about in terms of basically sexual gratification, some guys wanted to come in and get laid and that's not what you guys were about?
Basically, yes. The receptionist, every dungeon that I've ever worked in, were very clear in explaining to men that we did not engage in sex or sexual activity for money.
See, now you've already lost DJ Corey. He's going to wander off mentally throughout the entire show.
Aww.
So, that was the first thing that I was wondering. The activity, as you define it, is legal, right? There's nothing, you don't have to, be coy as some massage parlor do about the fact that you're really providing.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. So, the only thing that you have to clarify with your customers is you just don't want them to come in wanting a shoe shine of the yin yang
or a full release massage, as the kids are calling it these days.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of people do think that we're full service escort. And that's not exactly what dominatrix.
Are you allowed to be
self service escorts?
If slaves are good, then sometimes a generous mistress. Of self-release.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, so sometimes you allow the clients to gratify themselves.
But other than that, I guess nothing happens in a dungeon that doesn't happen on a hockey rink at some point or another, right?
That's one way of putting it. But I don't know how many hockey games you've seen lately.
So, So personally, like when we're interviewing people, like I like to kind of get a chronological narrative, as it were. So when you first started working as a dom, like, I guess I should ask, how did you get into it? Like, was this something that had become part of your own sex life and you thought, wow, you know, I can charge guys $300 an hour to do this? Why not?
No, actually, no. I met someone who was very interested in the scene, and he sort of gradually introduced me to it over a period of years, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very much older than I was, and he kept offering me money because he had a lot more of it than I did. And I couldn't figure out what he wanted in exchange for the money, so I kept offering to do various odd jobs. And after several years of this, literally.
Chop kindling and stuff? Or?
Well, laundry, washing the car, filing.
Little light typing?
What's that?
Little light typing?
Yes, exactly. Dictation.
And so at some point it dawned on you what he really wanted was?
To polish my boots.
To polish your boots?
For $100.
Wow, that's way easier than even light typing.
It sure is.
So I'm not being flip at all here, but was this a pair of boots you owned, or was it like, here's a pair of boots that I bought you, and I want to polish them? Like,
he did buy me boots, actually.
Hmm? He did?
He did buy me boots.
So it was that specific?
Yes.
Wow. And so this happened. So this guy paid you $100 to polish your boots.
And we began to have a dom-sub relationship.
Oh, so you were in a relationship with this guy?
Not a sexual relationship, but an erotic relationship, I suppose.
Okay.
One could say.
I mean, sounds as erotic as any odd job relationship I've ever heard.
It's at least as erotic as the maids who clean in the nude.
So just so I can help visualize this, what's the age difference we're talking about? You're going to be like 20-something.
I was 19 when I met him, and I was 23 when I allowed him to polish my boots for the first time.
And he was 50-plus?
50-plus, yes.
And he was like the highly successful CEO of a Fortune 500 steel company or something.
He was fairly successful.
Interesting. I mean, that's definitely like a stereotype, or I don't know, maybe even a myth of the dom sub business, right? That doms, or rather the submissive men, are generally like wealthy, successful men.
Generally, I have found that to be the case. Although
yeah.
I've also known men who were into the scene who were truckers, mechanics, factory workers.
Well, Morgan, let's bookmark that and get back to the beginning, actually, because I'm intrigued in the transition from your private relationship with this man to actually getting into the scene in general. Did he start bringing you to parties? Did he start introducing you to other boot-wearing mamas that he knew?
No, actually, I left him abruptly and moved.
As a good dominatrix should.
Exactly. And I answered an ad in the paper.
So it was more that once your eyes had been opened to the possibilities, then you seriously sat down and thought about, how can I pursue this commercially?
I had been looking for a way to make money off of the sex industry for a long time without compromising my principles.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that this was the perfect way to do it.
Had you explored blackmail?
No, I hadn't thought of that.
So you said you answered an ad in a paper. Was this then, I don't know what the right word is, it Dungeon Studio, you said? Was this a studio then advertising for talent?
It said, female-owned and operated dungeon. No sex involved. No experience necessary.
Sounds
Make
ideal.
Big money.
When I hear that, I think Dungeons & Dragons.
Well, you know, that wouldn't have upset me either.
Well, if it was big money involved.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, there's big money in Dungeons & Dragons.
Just ask Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
Not anymore, Lance.
So you Shade Story, although bored, is bored by us. So there you were. You answered this ad, and it was a studio. You said there are several other women who work there.
Yes, there are actually anywhere from 10 to 14 women there.
Wow. And so did you get mentored?
I did. I was thoroughly trained under several different mistresses in various arts of torture and humiliation.
Did they have to break you down in order to rebuild you in their image?
No, although there was certainly a lot of jesting about that.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, the dictum is you have to be submissive before you can know how to be dominant.
Right. Did the judge ever put out a dominatrix joke book?
No. Not that I'm aware of.
So the dungeon that I was at had a lot of different kind of cool theme rooms, like the hospital room and the makeup room and the boudoir room. Did this dungeon have similar themes? And did you ever become an expert in any particular areas?
My expert area, I suppose, is mostly pain. I'm not that into humiliation. I enjoy schoolroom scenes and dungeon scenes more than like heavy medical kinds of.
In our pre-interview, you mentioned something which I was intrigued by, and I'd like you to amplify on it. Was the so-called sissy room?
Yes. Well, the sissy room, or the cross-dressing parlor, is a magical, mystical place that contains many petticoats, shoes,
and frocks,
makeup, mirrors. And it's a wonderful place where a big brute can be transformed into a very submissive and docile little lady.
Interesting. So, I mean, I think the average naive person's view of S&M, or the dominant submissive world, or whatever you want to call it, is basically it's all black leather and chains and whipping and iron crosses and so forth. But you're saying actually there's like a great deal of subtlety and gradation between and degradation, as it were.
And apparently there's a whole subculture full of petticoats.
Right. I mean, just you mentioning the sissy room, the medical room, the schoolmarm room.
There's a lot of variation between activities that people who describe themselves as players engage in.
So what goes on in the sissy room? I mean, are you there, or is this trucker guy just kind of dressing up?
No. Yeah, I dress them. I put makeup on them, and I try to teach them how to walk.
Oh, so this sounds actually kind of nurturing and supportive and not really about domination or submission.
Well, it depends. If you came in, DJ, to a sissy room appointment, I would sit down and talk with you first, out of role, about what you expected, what you were interested in, why you wanted to dress up, what you wanted to get out of the experience. Was it a humiliating punishment, or was it a special treat?
Okay, let's say I wanted to go in because I wanted to be Blair from Facts of Life.
That would be very exciting for me. That would be a great scene.
I don't know. I'm a Joe man myself.
I would enjoy that. I would make you sing the theme song.
Would you have to dress up as the schoolmarm or whoever?
No, Mrs. I would never dress up as Edna, whatever her name is.
Okay.
So this interview intrigues me. So they actually would tell you explicitly, like, you know, I've been a bad boy. I need to be humiliated. I need to be, you know, made to feel low or small or whatever.
Actually, we had a checklist, generally, of items that you might be interested in. So we would go through, like a recipe or something. Spanking, flogging, wax, nipple torture,
DJ Corey's nodding his head to everything.
On and on.
Check. Right. My pencil will be worn down to a nub.
And so how long did the average session last?
The shortest session I ever did was 15 minutes.
Wow. That's slam, bam, thank you, ma'am.
Yes, that was a very intense spanking. Very hard for 15 minutes.
Okay, that's a lot of spanking then. Yeah, okay.
It is. And the longest was 5 hours.
Wow, all at one go.
5 hours. We did break for water. Food.
Wow, okay.
Well, let's talk about pain.
Your specialty.
So do you ever, again, when people think of dominatrices, they think of spanking, right? Maybe a riding crop, maybe, you know, a frat boy style paddle, right? But clearly the technology must have progressed, you know, since the 1940s, right?
Absolutely.
What do you, you know, when somebody comes in and they're, you know, a tough bronco to break, what do you do?
One of the things that you can do is electrical play.
Yeah.
Which is really a lot of fun. There's a great little toy called a violet wand.
Violet wand, I've heard of these, yeah.
Which gives off a lovely sort of lavender light and delivers a very mild shock. And it is actually adjustable. So you can vary the amount of shock that you deliver to a person's various body parts.
What about a simple cattle prod? Is that not quite enough?
There's a great thing, too, called a ball shocker, which fits securely around that area of the submissive body. And you can actually take the controls with you up to, I think, about 250 feet.
Wow.
You can actually be in the other room and administer quite a wake-up call to an unruly slave.
Wow. I mean, I guess I'm not surprised that, you know, domination and pain equipment has gone wireless. So, sorry, DJ Corey.
I was going to say on this scrotum shocker that you have, are, you know, as we learned in third grade in electricity class, you need sort of two poles for an electric circuit to flow. Are they, like, is there a device that's actually sort of flowing current from one side of his scrotum to the other? Or is it, like, static electricity? Or is it, like, you know, is one half attached to his penis and the other half attached to his, you know, big toe? Big toe?
Like, no.
How is it hooked
up? I think
up?
It's all contained in one box.
Hmm.
And it has, like, a little nub on the end that fits against the scrotum.
Oh, okay.
But with counterpods, there are two small contacts that are close together, and that delivers the shock, so I'd imagine it might be something similar.
Probably, indeed, based on cattle prod technology.
Well, it's the obvious jumping up point.
And so, I'm sorry, I just had a question. It's interesting to me, when you mentioned penis and scrotum play, as you did, this is still, like, considered, this does not cross the line, like, legal definition to prostitution. Like, you can, like, shock a man's scrotum and give him, like, you know, some twisted form of pleasure that way, and that's not prostitution and that's not sex? Is that the case?
It's not considered prostitution per se. But if the police force decides to be
overzealous,
that's a good word for it, an optimistic word, then they certainly can charge people who are practicing BDSM with all sorts of deviant little things.
Right.
Well.
And that has happened. People have lost custody of their children.
Has it happened someplace where you were working, or?
No. It's happened out west, and there are actually several dominatrices organizing to pull together funds to provide defense for people who are accused in cases of that nature.
So I have just the following question, which is that so whenever you do a job, parts of the job sort of sink into your psyche and change the way you look and think about the world, right? If you spend a large amount of your time sort of beating, humiliating, and inflicting massive pain on men, how does this change the way you're – how did that change the way you're acted to men in your daily life and the way you're acted to men that you were dating? Do you think of us as, you know, worms now?
I'm not sure if that could accurately be described as a change in my attitude.
Well, that's a reasonable answer to the question.
Right? But I mean, that's a good point.
No, actually, that's not true. And I think in order to be a successful sex worker at all, you have to enjoy men and enjoy male fantasy. And
even enjoy men when they're crawling around in all fours in petticoats like little sissy boys?
Well, absolutely, because they're enjoying it. They're having fun. They like it.
So did you guys actually, that's tendentially, that brought up a point I wanted to mention earlier. Like, did you have safe words?
Oh, absolutely. Right. Always.
And so that was all, you know, agreed on beforehand?
Yes.
Did they, I'm just curious, did they pick them, or did you, like, have yellow and red or whatever, like, standard safe word terms?
They generally chose them, although I would try to discourage them from saying words like, stop, because that's not a very effective safe word.
Yeah, it defeats the purpose of a safe word, right?
Yes.
You really want something like, you know, defenestrate or disestablishmentarianism that doesn't really come up in everyday conversation.
Most of the clients that I had couldn't say, let alone spell, disestablishmentarianism.
Well, this leads us back to Dr. Sexopoulos' point, which is another thing that I'm curious about, is the psychology of the men involved here. Again, the oldest cliche in the book about S&M is that men who want to be dominated are men who have power in their ordinary lives. And you claim that wasn't universally the case. But I'd like to see if you think it's how, to what extent that is true.
I think generally it's true, mostly because the prices for professional domination are so high.
Like, how high, roughly? Would
I have charged everywhere from $75 to $200 an hour.
So I'm curious about the pricing structure. So do you get, you were working in a studio, right? So what kind of cut did the studio, what kind of cut did the dungeon get, and how much did you get?
Generally 50-50.
And so what did you get in return for 50% of, I mean, what, you know, from them, what did you get in return for 50% of your money?
From the dungeon?
Yeah. Like, what did they provide?
Equipment, sometimes clothing, but mostly equipment. It's very expensive to outfit an adequate dungeon.
I guess so, yeah.
And also protection.
Yeah, that's true, the screening and protection.
And advertising. And a name. Because there is actually, per se, a protocol and an underground scene for professional domination. And for someone to just advertise in the back of the paper might take a long time for them to establish a clientele, whereas if you're with someone who's already established, you'll get more business.
I want to get back to this, but I want to actually re-ask the question I asked earlier about men being powerful. I'm not quite sure what your argument about cost means, because, for example, it can't cost any more – well, maybe it can cost more to go to a dominatrix than it can cost to go to a sort of a prostitute, right?
It can cost more, definitely.
But even so, it's not – they're relatively comparable, and there's no – there's sort of not – you know, prostitutes don't have the same reputation that dominatrices have for attacking men that are
wealthy, you know, and powerful.
Yeah, that are wealthy and powerful.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you'd seen sort of any glimmer of that kind of psychology in some of your own clients.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, to wax philosophical, it's probably just human nature. When you are in a position most of the time where you have to be very powerful and very in control, it only makes sense that sometimes you would want to relinquish that power and feel in the control of another person or a force larger than yourself.
Hmm.
And
okay.
I think that domination satisfies that need for a lot of men who are in powerful positions, especially in the kind of society where they're not allowed to express their vulnerability for fear of violating some kind of masculine code.
I think our producer is asking you to speak up just a little bit.
Okay.
We apologize. Well, that certainly explains why there aren't a lot of S&M fans in the among our grad student compatriots, right? We don't have any power to burn. Is there a big demand on the women's side for domination?
No, women can generally be beaten for free.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I mean, that's supposed to be some sort of sick joke, but it actually
I wasn't sure their interpret is that, yeah.
If you think about it, a female submissive placing an ad in the back of the paper for a male master to dominate her, to tell her what to do, when to do it, is likely to fetch many more responses than the same ad from a man to a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, women are submissive, but they generally don't patronize professional dominance
mm-hmm.
to the extent that men do.
Back to Dr. Saxopoulos' point about the economics, it is interesting because if the house really is taking half the money, there's got to be an enormous temptation for some of the better established women to go out on their own.
Did that happen much? Did women kind of go freelance once they had built up a clientele of regulars?
That does happen to an extent, but it's always a risk because establishments that have been around for years have a niche.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a risky thing to go out on your own. Some women do it and are very successful. Others do it maybe too soon or without enough support, financial and otherwise, and fail.
Like Icarus, they fly too high and come crashing down to the earth.
Yes.
So you mentioned that, you know, one of the benefits of working at a studio is like they provide the equipment, which can be very expensive. So do they provide clothing to her, or is that like some enormous expenditure of your own? You must go through $1,000 a week on leather.
That is an enormous expenditure of your own. Not only leather, but stockings, corsets, shoes.
Of course.
I would think the continual dry cleaning bills would be higher than the initial expenditure.
Well, the ideal thing is to find slaves to buy your wardrobe for you.
Oh, so that's allowed?
Yes. Encouraged.
So was there generally like a type just like of man who you would ask to buy clothing for you, just like there are the sissy men? Would there be the men, the slaves that you would tell to buy you stuff, or is that kind of an open to everyone, as it were?
That generally varied with every lady. I think you just naturally gravitate towards people that you have something in common with.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a nice relationship like that with a slave, then he's probably going to purchase you gifts.
That something in common isn't the desire to be beaten or to spend lots of money on someone, right? Because clearly that wasn't in your psychology.
No. But it's the desire to... Well, I guess it's complementary desires, right?
Yeah.
I like pain. I like to inflict pain.
Right. It's just like the first guy you ever dominated, right? Like, he bought you boots, so clearly the pattern is there, right?
Yes.
guys who have a specific need really want to see you in latex while you beat them.
Exactly. We'll buy you latex.
Right.
Correct.
What was your, I'm just curious, like, what was your favorite, least favorite thing that somebody ever bought you? Do you have any good stories about that?
Yes. I had a slave who had a very overactive imagination. He was a charming man, but he was really sort of out there. And he brought me, he used to stop at the health food store across from the dungeon on his way over. And he brought me diet soda and natural carob malted milk balls that he actually wanted me to insert into my vagina and then feed to him.
I suppose at least it was all natural.
I know. That's what he said, actually, to convince me.
But I suppose that crossed your boundaries, huh?
Yes. I said, if you think I'm going to stick chocolate up my twat,
is that just all that peeped?
No profanity, that's right.
Is that just all that peeped?
No profanity, that's right.
Allow me to summarize. Our caller did not choose to insult the to insert the malted milk balls in the appropriate orifice.
No, I didn't.
So there's a question I have. I mean, you're talking about when these men come in and you kind of give them a survey about what they want to do. This is a multi-part question.
Okay, so, I'm ready.
Are you ready? So the first part is, like, are people's, like, fantasies, like, really very standardized? They fall into a few general categories, or are people, like, very unique, and are you, like, actually, is there a lot of creative demand on you? Like, for example, I might come to you and say, you know, I'm a visitor to Planet Bad Boy, and, you know, I've insulted the queen, and I have to spend 1,000 years in, like, the cell of 1,000 penises. who will all, like, you know,
that would
flog
be absolutely
me.
Delightful.
So, for
yes,
you and me both, babe. But,
yes, DJ, that is true. Often people's fantasies do fall into various categories, which is why we have the schoolroom, the sissy parlor, the interrogation room, the jail cell, the medical room, right? However, when you do find someone who has sort of a strange fantasy or something that is creative and interesting, it can be a lot of fun to explore that.
Well, I can imagine, because that breaks out of the monotony of, you know, oh, great, you know, yet another bad student. Right. Who I get to spank with a ruler, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, when did you have the most fun at this job?
Generally when I was doing group sessions with more than one mistress, two or three mistresses that knew each other very well, together torturing a slave was a lot of fun.
That sounds like a real bonding activity.
It was. We enjoyed it.
And so, you mentioned the creativity and so forth. So did you find a big component of this job to be, like, acting, basically? I mean, I'm unsure, like, what part of being, how much, you know, of being a dominatrix is, like, this kind of psychological back and forth, and how much of it is you playing a role, and how much of it is you being yourself. I don't know if that question is making any sense.
Well, I think that it's easy to just play a role, to go in and act. But the most interesting scenes happen when both the dominant and the submissive are invested in what is happening. And as a dominant, I always try to watch my submissive very closely to see how they're reacting to what I'm doing so that I can provide them with an exciting experience. I can take them somewhere that they haven't been before.
You make it sound almost like method acting. Like the key thing is to really identify with the other person. Rather than to, you know, sort of read off some cut and dried script. Right?
I refuse to work with the script. If a submissive comes in and says, this is exactly what I want you to say, wear, and do, that's uninteresting to me.
You could say, like, no worm, I'm not going to do what you tell me to do.
Yeah. And they might decide to leave, and that's fine, but I won't go through with something where I don't have any opportunity to express myself.
Well, on that note, we have to humbly ask to change the subject to something we promised our listeners we'd talk about.
All right.
Which was your career as an exotic dancer.
Yes.
So this continues to fascinate us and our listeners. And, again, I think we should start at the beginning, but I want to first ask the question. Let's say I or a friend of mine, I'm going to call him Dr. Texopoulos. wanted to date a stripper, how do we go about doing it?
Well, I think the most important thing, which seems contradictory at first, but you have to face this. If you want to date a stripper, do not be a regular at a strip club.
Ooh. Hmm. Eerie.
No dancer will ever seriously consider dating someone that she sees at the club.
Is that because they lose... Wait, that's not what the dancers tell us every Tuesday.
Is that because they lose respect for you, or they just start to see you as, you know...
A cash machine?
Cash machine. Yeah.
Both, I think.
Wow.
Interesting.
Boyfriends can be cash machines, too. I'm not sure. Do the strippers really understand that?
That's my general impression. I didn't dance for very long, though. So I don't know if I can be considered a very trustworthy source.
Well, even, if, you, even if your direct experiences... you know, can't speak to the issue. Clearly, you know people.
You knew a lot of dancers, yeah.
Yes, yes. And I, the only person that I ever considered going out with that I met in a strip club was there once.
And what did he or she do to leave, make such a big impression on you?
He was very kind to just look me in the eye and talk to me like a person and said, "This is really awkward, but I would like to get together and have coffee. Here's my number." And didn't ask me for mine, and didn't give me some kind of line, and didn't stare at my legs or my breasts or my butt while we were speaking.
Oh, that sounds like almost pathological behavior for somebody in a strip club.
I think that's hard enough for most guys to do in ordinary life, even when surrounded, say, by elderly nuns.
In shapeless burlap garments.
Well, that's exciting. And so did you follow up on this date? I mean,
no, I didn't.
Oh, poor guy.
Wow. Sorry,
so let's go the other way. What are the cheesiest things that people do to try to date you then in clubs?
I'm just thinking that guy must have been a narc, actually. He wanted you to, like, wear a wire.
Which is why I didn't call him back.
Yeah.
Oh, good thinking. Good thinking, Morgan. So did people come in and lay, like, cheesy lines on you, like, "Hey, want to go for a ride in my new Jaguar convertible" and stuff like that?
Would you like to be a model? I can take photographs.
Not quite. Generally, they just tried to impress you with how much money they had.
Really? And you say that doesn't work with strippers?
Well, I'm sure it does with some.
But, right, remember, you know, Morgan is now in graduate school, right? So clearly money means nothing to her.
It's true. Unless she's in graduate school for moneyology.
She's becoming a doctor specializing in diseases of the rich.
I don't know if you're going to talk about your graduate school work, but is it something?
Are you? No, we're not going to talk about her thesis, DJ Gordon.
We're not. I'm just wondering if you're studying some, like, cool, like, sex-related field.
Actually, I just spoke to a professor recently about doing a project tracing the roots of queer theory back to the Marquis de Sade.
Hmm. So I guess that means you're in literature or English or... cultural crit or something?
Yes.
Career degree?
Yes. But, yeah, I think that there's a lot of opportunity, actually, to fuse my academic and other interests.
Is this something you've had to deal with? Have you been keeping it secret? Have you been talking to people about it?
I talk to people about it to a fair extent.
But you don't have the reputation like, "Hey, there's the stripper"?
No, okay. I don't.
Well, that's good. I mean, you don't sound so disappointed.
No, I'm not. There are other people who have that reputation.
Really?
I didn't realize what grad school is this.
It's a hotbed of ex-exotic dancers and dominatrixes. Wow. Maybe I haven't been in the wrong field all this time. So how did you, just to get back onto My Little Pony, so how did you get into, how did you start dancing?
I was living in Pittsburgh, and I wasn't very happy with the amount of money that I was making as dominatrix there.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to start dancing when I found out that I would be coming to graduate school, because it became my goal to just make as much money as possible, as quickly as possible.
So was the market for doms smaller? I mean, it must be smaller in Pittsburgh than it is in Philadelphia.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Is she going to reveal? Is she allowed to reveal which strip club she worked at here in Pittsburgh?
I don't know if I am or not.
Well, it's your call, Morgan.
Yeah. If you don't want to, we can certainly ask you many.
Well, I worked at several, so I don't think it would be fair to just single one out.
So you were kind of a freelancer.
Yes.
Okay.
So how does this start? Do you, again, the other one you answered, to become a dominatrix, you answered an ad in the paper. For dancing, did you start going to amateur nights? Did you take salsa classes to warm up?
Actually, I went to a clothing store and asked the woman. No, that's not true.
Was it the Limited?
Yes. It was the Gap, actually. It was Victoria's Secret. They have secret strip clubs.
No, but there are sort of stripper clothing stores, right?
Yes, and I did go to one and talk to the woman about getting a job, but she hadn't been booking for a long time, and she gave me another number.
Mm-hmm.
I called a different agent, and within probably a week, I was on stage.
Did you have stage fright at all the first time you were on stage?
Yes, and the second and third and tenth.
Really, I think you would just think, okay, they're all worms, and just like get up there and shake your dominant thing, but it wasn't that easy?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you're still being scrutinized.
Of course, yeah.
Yes, it's awkward, and it's not that easy to walk around a stage, let alone dance, in 5-inch heels.
Oh, my God. So they don't allow you to go up there barefoot, huh?
Or in sensible sneakers.
Or Birkenstocks, yeah. Perhaps.
Oh, well, there have to be theme hippie strippers that fit Birkenstocks, though. Morgan, I'm curious. Again, did you train for the day? Like, with domination, I can personally imagine myself walking and just starting to dominate people because I know how to inflict pain. I know how to humiliate people, right? But I'm not so sure that I'd be able to shake my ass in a way that would sexually arouse somebody.
So, don't underestimate yourself, Lance.
Well,
so did you watch, like, videos?
Did you watch Showgirls?
No, I watched the other girls.
Okay.
Ah. You watch the other girls to figure out how they do it. You watch them to figure out who makes the most money, and then you try to do what effort is that she's doing.
You mean get boob jobs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there much pressure in the dancing world to get, like, breast augmentation?
I think for career dancers, it's something that happens almost inevitably.
So there's not a market for, like, the more than a handful is a waste type.
Not much of one, no. Hmm. I mean, there's certainly an abiding market, but it's small.
There's certainly a what market?
Abiding.
Okay.
But in essence, you watched dancers, you got up on stage, you sort of, you know, jived around rhythmically, and it worked. Men gave you money, and you sort of refined your act, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it happened. Well,
so to all our listeners out there, that's how you do it. We've given you the blueprint. We've given you the map. You don't have to bug us anymore.
So that's one way to do it.
There's no reason why our entire listener can't now become a stripper.
So I, DJ Corey, am extremely unsatisfied with this answer in two ways. Actually, I want you to go a little bit deeper into this. I mean, like, do you think that you have an enormous sort of natural talent for dancing? I mean, when you're up there dancing, you do have to kind of, you know, you have to dance well. You have to, like, be comfortable in your body. You have to, like, give men that kind of, like, you know, that look, that sexy, lusty little smile, all that stuff. So that stuff, you either know it internally or you learn it. So you must either be a natural or you must have studied something.
I'm just a ham.
So are you one of these people that would you call yourself a natural flirt?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
I have to take issue with DJ Corey's question because this show took a field trip to the highway playground. And I just like to say none of those dancers flirted enticingly or seemed very comfortable with their bodies.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, yeah, but they're also working on let's face it.
In a fluorescent lit, you know.
Second-rate shop. They're not at Club E, for example.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, it definitely helps to flirt.
So, and my second question actually goes back to just briefly back to your role as a dom, in the sense that, you know, DJ Lance claimed it was just sort of easy to inflict pain on people, but in fact you have to.
I'll show you.
Inflicting pain in the right way is an art, right? You have to understand men's limits, and you have to know how to hurt them without damaging them. And,
that's absolutely.
And you have to, like, maintain. So
I've read accounts of the Chilean Revolution. You know, just beat the soles of the feet, and you'll be fine.
So, I once actually gave a man a blood blister on his penis.
Oh, ow.
Because I had it tied with leather string.
Mm. seriously
confusing. I was hitting it with a leather crop and didn't realize how hard I was hitting it, that the leather crop was cutting even further into his flesh.
Ow.
And he got a blood blister, and he was very upset because he had to go home and explain that somehow.
Ooh.
To his wife.
Wow. So even pros make mistakes, right?
Yes.
But
you learn to make them certainly less often. And there definitely is a lot to be said for playing safely and knowing which parts of the body to hit with what, how often, and how hard.
Well, Debbie, do you learn this by experience, or do like the elder matrons take you under their wing? Or?
Both.
But you
have mentors, people that will teach you. That doesn't always happen.
See, now, I just have an image in my head of a young dominatrix. This is like the Karate Kid, an older dominatrix. And the young dominatrix just beating the crap out of, like, a cantaloupe with a riding crop until it actually splits in half and then going, oops, and being scolded by the older dominatrix. Was it like that?
No, that would be the Hollywood version. No, it wasn't like that. But your headmistresses bring you into their sessions and show you how they're using implements, encourage you to use them on their slave with their supervision.
Okay. So a little internship.
Yes.
Okay.
A little mentoring relationship.
So this is, again, kind of a two-part question, or a question about both aspects of your sex work career. Another stereotype or myth about exotic dancers, and I guess to a lesser extent dominatrixes, right, is that there's this very slippery slope between stripping and sex work, like between being a prostitute, like actually doing sex for money. Did you find this to be true about stripping, or did you find this true about domination? Like, were there dominatrixes, or did you hear about them who eventually, like, became full-service dominatrixes? Were there strippers who were certainly crossing that gray area into, like, prostitution?
Well, I think that for every woman who engages in sex work, there is the opportunity to determine your own boundaries, what you are comfortable with, what you're not, how much money it will take to get you to perform certain activities.
I mean, you make it sound very enlightened, but I'm sure a lot of women don't go into it as, like, practical and theoretically grounded in women's studies as somebody like you, right? Like, who, well, you know, a lap dance isn't that different from a couch dance, isn't that different from a hand job in the champagne room, right? Like, is it, I mean, I guess this is my point. Like, is it this kind of sleazy, slippery slope, or are the women actually very aware of, like, their own boundaries and what they will and won't do for $200? I'm thinking about the dancer specifically.
It depends on the individual. Generally, I would say that people who start dancing at 18 and never experience any other career, never obtain any education, probably will be more likely to keep dancing because it is good money. And after a certain point, you can't keep dancing. And that's when I think probably a lot of women turn to prostitution as a viable alternative career.
Where is that dividing line? Where do people become too old to stop to start to keep dancing?
The oldest dancer I ever worked with was 35.
Wow.
I would think
it's too late, DJ Corey.
I would think that, you know, you kind of burn out on both at the same time, right? I mean, men usually want, like, for the most part, young prostitutes, right? I mean, I hate to say it, but if you're, like, 35 and you're no longer dancing, can you really just turn to prostitution?
More easily. Yeah. The standards for dancers are much higher than the standards for prostitutes or escorts.
Interesting.
That doesn't surprise me because with dancers, right, they come out and they're sort of everything's, you know, up in the store window right away. whereas with, you know, escorts, I would imagine that there's at least some personal interaction.
Right.
And that the women are fully clothed for part of it at least. So it depends partially on, like, the attractiveness of the personality, right? Sorry, go ahead, Morgan. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, you get to touch dancers, or you get to touch escorts. You don't get to touch dancers.
Right.
So dancers have to look much better than escorts.
True. Interesting.
As for dominance, most dominance actually comes from prostitution to domination,
really?
Not the other way around.
So then you knew women that you worked with who had been escorts or prostitutes and then went into the dom business?
Yes.
Did they have like a different view on domination than you did? Like, it seems like you kind of, you know, got interested in, might even say, as a hobby or whatever, and slowly got introduced to it in this Svengali-like way. Did they have a different view on it?
Well, I think that they viewed it as a way to make potentially more money and not engage in high-risk sexual activity.
Right.
Yeah, it certainly seems less messy, except for maybe some blood spilled.
Or the occasional malted milk ball.
Again, God. Morgan has clearly set the precedent that you can refuse the malted milk balls if you so choose.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just have to say no.
And because we do have a public service mandate, I actually am kind of interested in, like, knowing if I were, say, a Pittsburgh resident, a little bit shy, wanted a little beating up, but didn't know where to go.
What do you mean, if?
Can I just turn to the city paper or the In Pittsburgh magazine or whatever it's called and just look in the back? And how do I find a reputable dom?
How do you tell who's good?
Would be a good way to go about it. Doms who advertise internationally and nationally are generally a safe bet.
Ooh, so internationally.
So, in what kind of – are we talking about like the International Herald Tribune? I mean, like, what magazine or what –
There's an excellent magazine called Domination Directory International.
Ooh. That's pretty.
Or DDI.
Direct.
Oh, and I would get that at, say, an adult bookstore, for example, or what?
Yes, you could. Also, online is a great place to look for local dominatrix.
Really? Is there, like, what's the best domination website?
I wouldn't even venture a guess, but if you enter fetish or BDSM, you'll get
7 trillion hits.
Yes. look by your city and make sure when you talk to a dominatrix that you're comfortable with her.
Is there a checklist of questions we should have prepared?
Yes, absolutely. Do you use safe words? Mm-hmm. What kind of equipment do you have?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been practicing BDSM?
Mm. Have you ever given someone a painful penile blood blister?
Yes. Definitely ask that.
Mr. Morgan, we're running out of time. I want to cover one more thing about male psychology. I'm not sure why it's the male psychology that keeps fascinating me, which is we've had
DJ Corey knows.
We've had dancers in here before who are very reluctant to talk about their relationship with their customers for fear, it seemed to us, of alienating their customers.
Right.
So... again, it's this cliche, it's sort of a pop cultural belief that there are lots of men that are hopelessly in love with dancers, come repeatedly to see that dancer, sort of shower them with money, clearly, according to your statement, have no chance to ever date them, right? Yet, there's got to be something going on the dancer side to maintain that behavior and sort of keep the cash machine open. How does that end up working out?
Well, generally I would say that the dancer's motivation is to make as much money off of that individual as possible without encouraging him to stalk her.
That's quite a tightrope to walk, isn't it?
It is. And some women are very, very good at it.
Hmm.
Well, I guess it's a classic free market in action, right?
So really, the dancers are just there to manipulate you out of your money.
Their job.
Well, they're not stripping for fun, yeah. They want to do that, they could do it, like, at home, in flannel.
Yeah, but I've seen Pretty Woman, you know, you can imagine this. Once in a while, a dancer or somebody has to fall in love with their John, right?
Maybe once in a while.
But you're saying it just ain't going to happen.
I don't think so. Wow. I wouldn't hold your breath.
Wow, that's a chilling view of human nature, but I guess it's good to know the truth.
How many women do you know have poles in their living room?
Have poles in their living room? 2 1/4, kind of.
That's not a pole. That's a plunger stuck in the middle of the floor.
Sorry. Actually, I thought it was a traffic safety cone. But, anyways, why do lots of dancers have poles in their living room?
No, but that's why they're there, to take money. If they were there to dance and have fun, they would be at home in their living room.
They're not in their living room. I get it now.
So, I mean, while we're talking about the psychology of strippers, I actually have a question. I mean, like, every, like, you know, over-educated Ivy League dork that you run across will say, oh, you know, most professional dancer strippers are lesbians because, you know, they're doing this whole thing where they're, like, the reason they, like, do this thing with men is because they're subverting the dominant paradigm, blah, 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 right? You know, you know, by getting men to pay them to be sexy and strip, they're like inverting the normal power relationship. You know, it pains me to even try to reconstruct the argument. But
you're an overeducated Ivy League dork, though.
But
I know just what you mean, DJ.
And so the question is, like, but you actually sound like, I mean, I get the impression that you're heterosexual, you like men, you like doing these services for men, you belie this whole stereotype that I've just tried to describe.
I would say that the stereotype is largely false in my experience.
That's what I thought.
So did,
I mean, it would be nice to think that most sex workers were enlightened feminists, but that's just not the case.
What are they, mostly like party girls, mostly just cute women who want to make a lot of money, easiest way possible? What? I don't know.
I guess I'm looking for some sweeping statement. Sex industry, and most of them are women that have a lot of courage and a lot of hope and not very many opportunities.
Well, that's the other sort of pop cultural stereotype about dancers, is that a lot of them are there because they have to support someone or they're in sort of financial trouble, and this is the only way for women, you know, for women who sort of aren't on the super educational track to make a lot of money in a short amount of time.
The sex industry is the only industry in which women consistently make more money than men.
Yeah. More money than men. It's from the numbers you're throwing out. People in your old line of business are making more money than computer science PhDs.
Yeah. So, did you see people making more money as DOMs or more money as dancers?
It depends. It all depends on the woman. It's a business where you are your own individual contractor.
But I mean, you personally, did you? Who made the most money of anybody you saw? Was it a dom or was it a dancer? I'm just kind of curious.
Dancers,
okay.
I bet it's like professional sports where there may be tendencies sort of in each one, but they're clearly superstars in the other one that, you know, exceed the averages in each of the ones.
I was sort of wondering, did you let your experiences as a dom, like, inform your abilities as a dancer? Like, do you, like,
dance with a whip?
Exactly. Or when you, like, flirt with a man, like, you know, who's, like, feeding you dollar bills, do you, like, give him a little pinch or
a little
elbow in the ribs? To let him know?
A little shock to the genitals.
I tried that a lot. It didn't work out very well. Generally, the image that men want to have of dancers is very different than the image that they want to have of a dominatrix.
Hmm.
And I found that a lot of clients at strip clubs were very confused when I presented them with my dominatrix image.
Well, if only you could somehow combine the power of both professions to become a dancinatrix, you'd be unstoppable.
Someday. That's what I'm in graduate school for, actually.
On that note, we're just about out of time. Any final questions?
Well, I actually do think that finally, at your thesis defense, you can totally, like, if any of these, like, sassy professors tries to give you, like, an annoyingly hard question, you can totally put them in this place.
Pull out the bullwhip, whip the cigarette out of their mouth.
Thank you.
And activate the remote control genital shock cuff.
Right. Well, it's been very good to talk with you all.
Thank you very much, Mrs.
Thanks, Morgan.
It's been amusing and enlightening.
And humbling.
Yes, and
thank you, mistress.
We're going to look forward to having you on again.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. This is WRCT Pittsburgh. Tune in every week for shows such as this one.
Oh, we won't be back, though, until
January. This is our last show. This is our last show for the semester. So,
but if you want to take a trip down memory lane, just visit our website, sextalk.wrct.org.